It's Tuesday, December 29th, and people will be saying her name for a long time. We start here.
We don't need this to be a one-day occasion.
You could not have predicted that 2020 would see the largest demonstration for civil rights in modern history. And she certainly wouldn't have predicted that she'd be leading the crowd.
They weren't going to help Breonna anymore, but it'll definitely help the Breonnas to come.
In a year defined by a staggering loss of life, the question still remains.
The exclamation point for America 2020. There's something wrong with America.
Does every life matter in the eyes of the law? From ABC News, this is a special edition of Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. At the end of the year, we like to do what we so rarely get a chance to do here. We get to go back to people who were affected by some of the year's biggest stories and get some more perspective on what those events have taught us.
Here in the U.S., now more than 60,000 cases. The death toll has climbed over 1,000.
And now Louisiana has more cases per capita than every other state except for New York and Washington.
Usually it's tough to tell what the most impactful stories will be ahead of time. But by March of this year, it seemed clear what the biggest story would be.
We continue to report on the toll on African Americans in this country disproportionately affected by this virus, from access to testing and medical care to more severe outcomes if they get the virus.
COVID-19, right? We talked about that yesterday. But COVID was already starting to expose older rips in America's social fabric when this happened.
What's his name?
George Floyd!
What's his name?
We're going to continue now, guys, with that breaking news overnight. We're talking about the protests and the chaos in the streets from Minneapolis to Los Angeles, the anger erupting across the country over the death of George Floyd while in police custody.
And we warned you, the video is very difficult to watch.
This country has always wrestled with race, divisions, policing, but for many, this year was a sea change in how we see ourselves. And it went beyond one case, several incidents, each one more scary and painful and unjust than the last, including some that happened before that moment had even swept the nation. Perhaps no name was more invoked than Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old woman killed by police in Louisville, Kentucky, as they burst into her home, encountered Breonna's frightened and legally armed boyfriend, and opened fire. So what happens after those moments? How did they inform the rest of this year? And where do we go in the years to come? Well, just before Christmas, we caught up with the mother of Breonna Taylor. Hey, Tamika Palmer, thank you so much for joining us. It sounds like you're on the road, right? Where are you right now?
I am in the car in Louisville, Kentucky.
Wait, a family member told me you had to do some Christmas shopping. So you're literally, you're doing the shopping right now.
Yes, I am.
All right, fair enough. Ms. Palmer, you've talked about this at length, so I don't want to belabor the painful memories. But just, you know, as we're getting a sense of the year through this wider lens, can you put me back in March of this year? Because, you know, a lot of people at this point did not know what COVID-19 was. Most of America certainly did not know the name George Floyd. And yet it's at this time where you're getting that call describing your daughter. How did you find out, by the way? Was it the police themselves that told you about this?
No, actually, Kenny is the one who called me. Her boyfriend,
right,
is the one who called me and said that someone kicked in the door and shot Breonna. And so that night just spiraled from that moment.
So it's a loud boom at the door. First thing she said, who is it? No response.
Back in March, three plainclothes Louisville police officers stormed Breonna's home, executing a no-knock search warrant.
Door, comes off the hinges. So I just let off one shot. I still can't see who it is or anything.
Records show Miles Cosgrove fired his gun inside Taylor's apartment. Mattingly says he returned about 6 shots after a bullet hit him in the leg.
The officers fired 20 rounds in return, killing Breonna.
It was a nightmare just from the moment I arrived on the scene. I was told to go to the hospital, that she was there. I went to the hospital that night. I waited for 2 hours. And someone at the hospital told me that she was not there and that they don't even have a record of her being on her way there. Mm. So I knew I needed to go back to the scene.
Hey, she's down at the end of the hall. She is down at the end of the hall.
I kept screaming for someone to tell me where she was. And that's when a detective finally said, and it was around 11 or so the next morning.
Let's go ahead and move out. All right, she's done. We'll keep one person here on her. She's done.
He said, well, ma'am, she's still in the apartment. And I knew what that meant then.
Oh, you know then, if she hasn't been transported yet, then, like, that's bad news.
Yeah.
What was your impression of the police before that moment, before that year? And did it evolve in the coming days and weeks?
I've already never trusted the police just from the things that growing up seeing and experience. So I've just always kind of been a person to just try to stay out of their way. You know, we were
really
taught, you know, just to not stay out of their way. Don't turn around in a car if they're behind you. Don't say this. Don't speak too loudly. Don't, you know, because of the way that we will be treated. So we've always had this defense when it came to the police, and just dealing with this experience, I now definitely understand why we feel that way, because there was a number of things that they handled poorly, and just it doesn't give me faith or the people in the community. So
that was interesting that you said you were taught this, like this was like generational knowledge, essentially, like common knowledge in the community.
Absolutely. Just even being a teenager outside playing with friends, and the police would come running up on us, get on the ground, you know. So we've just to experience those type of things is traumatizing as a kid.
And so then, like, I'm just trying to get a sense then of how this year plays out, because the investigation's going on. I just can't imagine the grief that you and your family would be going through. Well, then George Floyd, this man named George Floyd, is killed on May 25th. So I'm wondering if you felt that in Louisville, because I could completely imagine that all you're paying attention to is your own family, your own thing. Was that even on your radar, though?
It definitely became a part of it. I was definitely consumed with what I had going on, but just to hear or see, to be able to have to watch the police in action do this to another human being at this time when even this big thing is already going on was unreal. So it definitely became a part of my daily thing to deal with and keep up with and be a part of.
Now, Ms. Palmer, we are more than sorry for the loss of your daughter, especially after all this. It's been 2 months since Breonna was killed, and you say no one from the police department has reached out to you or anyone else in the family?
And so, I mean, I imagine that just because it seems so natural that you'd have the grief, and then that would turn to anger, like the injustice of it. Did it surprise you, though, that grief and anger would also turn for you into activism?
Her beautiful spirit and personality is working through all of us on the ground. So please continue to say her name, Breonna Taylor. Absolutely. And a year ago, before that day, a year ago, you couldn't have never told me that I'd be that person. I've always been a private person. I don't like to speak out in crowds, and I don't, you know, want to be that person in the light. And so to have this thing happen, and now I don't feel like, you know, it's not something I want to do. It's something I have to do.
Right. And so that makes me wonder then, you're in the middle of all this, and of course people are rallying around you. When you look back on the summer, when you look back on the protest, what did you think of the protests as they were happening? Were they inspiring? Did it catch you off guard? Were they nerve-wracking? Like, what is it like to watch these thousands of people converging on cities like yours because of your family?
To be honest, it's all of the above, you know, in one sense, it's like to, it's beautiful to watch people come from all over the world to stand together for something that for a person none of us, a lot of them never even knew, but to stand there because they know what happened to this person is wrong. But then there's things like you carry with you stuff that are happening during these protests. Then you carry that burden. So now it's like it's so many different emotions running all at once. It's unreal.
What, and what do you mean stuff that's happening during, like the stuff that you're carrying with you? What do you mean specifically?
Boards newly nailed to windows, fencing up around downtown buildings as the city and the federal government make preparations for an announcement.
Like people's businesses being broken to, other people being hurt during protests. You know, so you now you carry that with you.
Overnight, demonstrators taking to the streets in Louisville, clashing with police, setting multiple small fires, and smashing a bus stop in the downtown area, officers arresting almost 100 people. At least two Louisville officers shot. One.
Because it's like, oh my God, these people are out here because they what happened to Breonna is wrong, but now people are getting hurt or innocent people's businesses are burning or being torn apart, and you know, so you start to carry that.
Just do your job. It's just as simple.
Calling on Attorney General Daniel Cameron in front of his East End office to arrest and charge the officers involved in her daughter's case.
And the settlement had nothing to do with this criminal case, and the criminal case was the main objective, to get the justice for Breonna Taylor.
Did that change your perspective of the summer? Like, because you in your life, we could see you. You were really trying to put pressure on the city to make like these specific changes. Like, mm-hmm. Here's one thing I want. Here's another thing I want. Did the protest and did the movement make your mission easier or did it make it harder?
I don't think it has its days. I'll say that, but I definitely don't think that it made it harder to see these people come from all over the world, all different walks of life, all different nationalities, gave you power. It made you want to keep going. It makes you want to, you know, like somebody believes in what you're saying. Somebody stands behind what it is you're trying to get for everybody. Because the things that I want, they weren't going to help Breonna anymore, but it'll definitely help the Breonnas to come.
Of course, we want to get right to our top story, anger, unrest nationwide after that grand jury decision to decline charging those three officers in the fatal shooting, 26-year-old EMT Breonna Taylor in her own home, Michael. And
Robin. Okay, so then 9 months later, where do we stand in your mind? Like whether it's from a, you know, the city perspective, from the national perspective, where do you feel like the movement has succeeded? And I guess where has it fallen short?
We've fallen short with justice. We still haven't gotten there. We're still fighting. Mm. 9 months later, we're still dealing with what everything that went wrong that night, and nobody willing to stand up to that. So as a city, as a nation, we'll never heal until people are held accountable. And so I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon. It definitely won't for me because I can't stop fighting. No one, you know, no one's been held accountable. Like it, you know, changing laws and policies is good. But if we don't hold the people accountable that broke those laws and those policies, then what are we really doing?
And it's interesting that you mentioned sort of where this fell short first, because in the fall, your family did reach this record settlement with the city for her death. It was by far the largest amount ever paid to the family of a victim of police violence. But it sounds like that doesn't feel like a game changer to you. Like that does not feel like a win, however small.
No, not at all. It doesn't help me. It doesn't, right. You know, that's just you. I mean, no. A settlement's great now for what, I mean, for just what it was, a settlement on civil justice, but it doesn't change the fact that my daughter was murdered that night. It doesn't, you know, she doesn't benefit from that settlement. That wasn't a win at all.
So I guess my last question for you, Ms. Palmer, is just because I know you're preparing for the holidays and holidays can be hard. Are you thinking about the holidays in a different way this year? Like, was Christmas a big thing for Breonna, for your family?
It's gonna be a difficult Christmas. Brianna loved Christmas. Brianna loved any holiday. Really, she wanted everybody to come together. And so she was just definitely always big on getting the family together and trying to have, you know, a Christmas dinner party, game night, something. And so here we are trying to put this together, and she's not here, and it's so unreal because she's the person that does that. She's the person that everybody comes because everybody wants to see Brianna.
She's the connector. Like, she's been the connector.
Yes, absolutely. So it's, I don't know what to, and I'm not looking forward to it. I'll say that.
Yeah, I believe you. I just know a lot of people are rooting for you and are just so thankful for your, I guess, your generosity of spirit, for sharing of yourself this year. And we here are thankful for just how generous you've been with your time on a busy day. Tamika Palmer, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Next up on Start Here, that's one of several families. So what happened to the others? We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And we do want to get right to the latest on that police killing of a black man in Atlanta, Rayshard Brooks.
The FBI is now joining the investigation into the death of Casey Goodson.
Two Philadelphia police officers shot 27-year-old Walter Wallace multiple times.
That man shot by Kenosha police is identified by his fiance as 29-year-old Jacob Blake.
Now, Dijon Kizzy's family, they say they are demanding justice for his death. Now just take a look.
And shockingly, tragically, Breonna Taylor's family is not the only one that is marking their first holiday season without that loved one who was killed by police or just killed unjustly in the name of justice. So really quickly, I want to turn to ABC's Byron Pitts, the co-anchor of Nightline. Because Byron, I'm wondering, when we look back on 2020, like years from now, what are we going to remember through the lens of race and justice?
To me, 2020 relates to race and justice is like 1955 America and Emmett Till.
He testified that the two men on trial came to his house on the night of August the 28th and took the Till boy away, and that he never saw the boy alive again.
Like, I have relatives and older friends who remember Emmett Till's death like it was yesterday. It shaped them both personally, professionally, changed their souls. And I think this year with Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and all the others, that we're now as a nation having our Emmett Till moment.
You understand how scary it is to know that one day I'll have a black son and maybe one day a white cop will see him and be scared and shoot him?
That we saw something together so outrageous, so beyond the pale.
We don't need this to be a one-day occasion. We need this to be something every day that people stand up amongst each other and make sure things happen.
That it shook us, and I think it shook people into action.
Thanks. What you're seeing right there are crowds gathering in front of St. John's Church in Lafayette Square. Of course, that was site of the moment where President Trump went across that street as protesters were out there for the Black Lives Matters movement, brandish a Bible.
Some of it angry, but I think a lot of it productive, important, significant.
Well, so, but I'm wondering what made it our Emmett Till moment? Because, like, sadly, let's face it, it's not as if this was the first year that we've seen these kinds of stories and these kinds of killings.
8 minutes and 40 plus seconds. When the nation got to watch George Floyd take his last breath.
His nose is bleeding.
About 5 minutes into the video, Floyd appears to lose consciousness. Bystanders urging police to check his pulse.
Let me see a pulse.
But the officer does not get up. More than 7 minutes into the video, EMTs arrive on the scene and check his pulse. The officer's knee still on Floyd's neck.
And they watched as a police officer, his knee on his neck, his hands in his pocket, and a look on his face that said, it's Tuesday. Nothing more than that.
They treated him worse than they treat animals. They took a life, now they deserve life. I don't feel sorry for them. They hurt me and they hurt my family.
And I think in the same way, the image of this teenage boy, Emmett Till, in a casket, his bloated face, distorted face, he looked like a monster. Said something to the nation.
Because we know that there ain't going to be no justice. It's going to be thrown under the rug like every other Minneapolis cop murder. Oh, that guy died from health problems. Oh, he punched the cop. Oh, he tried to get away. That's all.
That's your name.
That it was the exclamation point on a sentence.
This is America.
Right, and the sentence in 1955 was, there's something wrong in America.
To be American, you gotta be white. If you're not, you're not American. I'm tired of it.
And I think George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and the other names were the exclamation point for America 2020. There's something wrong with America.
Right, and so you had like this photographic evidence, and then this year, of course, you had these videos that just seemed to come one after the other, including, like, and some of them involved cops, but others didn't. Some involved, you know, bird watchers. Some of them involved just men in Georgia on the street. At the end of all that, though, Black Lives Matter was the rallying cry that it had already, we'd heard it before, but it had this new resonance. Defund the police was the other rallying cry that many people were hearing for the first time. Had those rallying cries had an effect? Have they had their desired effect?
I think so. I mean, I think for many people, when they first hear the term defund the police, it strikes them like the term reparations. Like, what?
They want to defund and dissolve our police departments. Think of that.
Why do we have to pay for sins of the past in this way? Why, in the case of defunding the police, for many people, the fear is, are you talking about closing down a police department?
A very tough hombre is breaking into the window of a young woman whose husband is away as a traveling salesman or whatever he may do. And you call 911, and they say, I'm sorry, this number is no longer working.
And I think most reasonable people accept that's a bridge too far. But the true definition of defunding police in this context is not shutting down police departments, but is it time to reallocate resources that, you know, because we ask our police departments to police the streets, to provide mental health assistance, to help the homeless, to a variety.
Like police in your schools, right? Like kids acting up, all of a sudden they're not dealing
exactly
with the principal. They're dealing with like a police officer, with law enforcement.
Exactly. And so I think part of the concept with defunding the police is there a new way to reallocate resources so we're not asking our police departments to do everything and to do things they're not skilled to do?
I'm less in favor of defunding the police as some sort of weird punishment and more in favor of making appropriate investments in public safety.
We've talked to police chiefs out west in Seattle who are looking at how do they, as the police chief there said, reimagine policing.
Now, these activists also want to create Daniel's Law, which would pair specialized mental health task force members with law enforcement officers for mental health calls like Daniel Prude's.
Not defund the police, not tie their hands up, but how do we reimagine what law enforcement should look like in 2021 and beyond?
But so then that makes me wonder, Byron, because like we said, like the images, these moments are the things that shock the conscience. Are the images that we're going to remember in 5 years, 10 years, are those the images, or are they going to be burned out buildings, lootings, shootings in the street? Are different Americans going to have different recollections of what this actually meant? And is that a divider in and of itself? How do you rectify that?
You know, great question, Brett. It's been said to me that America's been divided since 1619. Since the first slaves arrived in this country, we've been a divided nation, and we have these conversations at different times. As an African-American man, I can say these conversations have been going on in black barbershops every Saturday since I've been alive, and that won't change. So yeah, the burnt out buildings, that's part of it. The marches are part of it. The George Floyd video, the Ahmaud Arbery videos, those are all part of it. I mean, it is a complicated matter. If it were simple, our ancestors would have settled this issue, but it's not.
Daniel Snyder will change the name of the Washington Redskins.
The Cleveland Baseball Club is expected to make a huge announcement today that the team will no longer go by the Indians.
The makers of Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, and Mrs. Butterworth all facing criticism and vowing changes in the wake of nationwide protests.
There are plenty of images for us all to look at and plenty of mirrors for each of us to look into and say, what can I, what should I do to make this better?
Yeah, in so many ways, Byron, you served as sort of this clarifying force for us. You know, you were at the funeral of George Floyd in Houston, but also just on election night when we talk about some of these other social issues, just connecting the dots, I think. And that will be something that continues long into the new year. There's no vaccine for this American issue. Byron Pitts from Nightline. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
Thanks to Brianna's whole family for making that happen, along with ABC producer Stephanie Wash, who is really in and out of Louisville for the better part of the year covering this specific story. That'll do it today as we gain perspective on this year. Tomorrow, we're actually going to take a big look forward, so stick with us for that. I'm Brad Milton. See you tomorrow.